With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Jake Cunningham, and my accomplices in this episode are Campbell A. Campbell.
Hello.
Kelly Powell.
Hello.
And Stephen Ryder.
Hello.
This week, Death by Trigger Happy Teens in Assassination Nation, and Life by Sticky Fingered Means in Shoplifters. We're talking about Hirokazu Koreeda's Palme d'Or winning Shoplifters first. Now, we are going to have an interview for this film up on the Curzon blog. Campbell, it was yourself that did that one. You're lucky enough to speak to the director of this film.
Yes.
You give a bit of background on Shoplifters and Koreeda, maybe the films that came before him. We can maybe talk about how we all know his work.
Right. So Shoplifters is the latest in a body of work that's a couple of decades strong. Koreeda himself has kind of become known in the latter part of his career for focusing on these very kind of warm, insular family movies. Slowly but surely, they've been kind of edging towards dealing with class difference. So he had a film from 2013 called Like Father, Like Son, which shows the divide between a privileged family and a less privileged one, and in a real, based on a real story in which in the 80s in Japan, there were children who accidentally got swapped at birth with parents, so people would take home the wrong child. And Like Father, Like Son is about that, about a fairly wealthy couple who find out that their child is someone else's, and that someone else's family is far less well off than they are. So Shoplifters kind of occurs as like a natural extension of that, dealing with a family in a kind of underclass, barely scraping by with actual work, so they steal to make a living, and there's just taking place in more or less a shack and exploring the lives of this surrogate family.
Yeah, it is a really interesting one. I find him as a filmmaker quite amazing, because when we think of filmmakers that maybe churn out one film a year, we use phrases like I've just had done, churn, which is almost like makes it feel like a factory operation. And the thing with Koreeda is that in the last 6 years, there have been five films. They're consistently getting big international festival premieres, very warm reception critically. We've got in that time, as you say, Like Father, Like Son, Our Little Sister, The Third Murder, After the Storm, and then Shoplifters comes out, and in a way it's like, oh, there's another one, but this time it actually wins the top prize at Cannes and suddenly puts a filmmaker who within certain circles has always been big very much on a larger stage than he has done before.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't too familiar with Koreeda's work before I saw Like Father, Like Son, and haven't really been keeping up with him. It was a film that I really enjoyed, and I think you expressed like why it's kind of, it's a high concept film, a lot like Shoplifters, is that you can explain it in one or two phrases. And I think that he has a tendency to make films like that, that are super complex films that can take a while to fully understand, and especially the characters within that film and how they work alongside each other. I think that happens quite evidently in Still Walking. He likes these high concept ideas, and he likes placing complex characters into high concept situations. And I think Shoplifters is no different. I think you've got a family who are struggling on the fringes, and as the film goes on, you slowly realize that they are an unconventional family. And what Corrie is trying to do is pick apart and define exactly what a family is. Mm. He does it in a very kind of subtle way, and to the point where you only realize what's been happening, I think, kind of like halfway through, three quarters of the way through the film.
I think it might be easy to dismiss Shoplifters because it's like, oh, it's him doing his thing, like another pseudo family drama. But I think that he has so much variety in how he works. I was talking to him about this the other day, but he was mentioning how he likes rotating the crew on his film. So he always works with new composers, always works with new cinematographers. He always brings in kind of new child actors when there's children involved. So even when the kind of differences between his films, especially in the later stage of his career, are the differences are fairly minimal in terms of theme. Like, it always feels like something new, to me at least anyway, partly because of the way in which he tries to mix things up with the kind of craft of the film. But then also with these ones, there's still very particular feelings that he tries to unpack with each one. After the Storm, more about, it kind of focuses in more on fatherhood. Like Father, Like Son, also another one about fatherhood, but also like kind of adds that
the class,
extra dimension, yeah, of class,
yeah,
difference.
Absolutely.
And even things like Still Walking, it's like a very insular drama about, it's like specifically about loss. But the thing about Shoplifters that makes it stand out amongst this kind of more recent batch of his films is kind of, it has a bite to it that I think things like maybe After the Storm doesn't have, because, you know, it's the warm fuzzies with those ones. It's right. I've seen someone describe his work as kind of being like live action Studio Ghibli films. Mm. But I think with Shoplifters, not saying that they don't have bite, but with Shoplifters, there's kind of an edge to it and a kind of very raw sadness to a lot of these characters that I think resonated with me much stronger than a lot of his other recent work, which I still love anyway, but this is what kind of put it head and shoulders above it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've spoken a lot there about the connections between these work and how they might interplay thematically and even with the production side of things. For yourselves, it's very much been an informed film based on previous viewing. But Kelly, you're coming to Corrie's film here, as a lot of audiences will, because this film, Shoplifters, has a much bigger platform than any of his other ones have had before. Mm. How is it for you coming to this film as a new viewer?
So I didn't know, shamefully, haven't seen any of his other films. But I found this one so profound in its simplicity, almost. I found it's told through moments and really authentic, genuine moments that you feel you kind of just lose yourself in the story. And it has almost like this neorealist element to it that I really enjoyed. Just telling this really humanist story of these people on the margins, sort of struggling to survive and finding themselves a sort of makeshift family that they care deeply about each other, but have to commit these sort of misdemeanors in order to survive.
Yeah, so just give the story a quick bit of background. It's about a collection of people sharing this one shack, as you put it, Stephen. Mm. Very overcrowded, small, jumbled flat. And
that production design's great, right?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Yeah, yeah. There are actually, I know you mentioned Ghibli already, there are a few flats in a few of the more urban Ghibli films, and this really has a familiarity to particularly something like Whisper of the Heart. So this, quote, in quotes, family take in a young girl called Yuri at the start of the film, who has been abandoned by her family, and they take her in, and initially it's, we'll only have her for one night, and immediately you sense this family dynamic where we've got a cheeky father who's going to give her one extra chicken nugget and is saying to his partner, we can let her stay. And maybe that one day turns into 2 days, and then that turns into a few months, and then the police start investigating what's happened to this girl. The way, when you tell it like that, when you give it these two sentence structures, it feels so much more melodramatic than it actually is. Mm. Like when you say about like Father, Like Son, like switched at birth.
Yeah. It's so subdued.
Yeah.
By comparison.
And that's throughout all his films. And he's really actually downplaying the level of drama that's in it.
Oh, for sure.
And that gives it so much more heart, and it gives it so much more reality.
He's a natural storyteller. Like that's that he tells stories in, like Kelly said, like moment by moment. And the idea of taking someone's child away from their house, bring them to your family, and then just keeping them,
and what, is, teaching them to steal.
Is, when you say it like that, it comes across as like you question the motivations of these people, and you question how, you know, in your head, how stupid can they be? But when you're watching the film, it does not feel like that at all. Like it almost feels logical that the people who love the person the most get to keep them, because that's what family is like. You know, there's so many important lines within the film that kind of form a thesis for what Corrida is trying to say, I think, and a lot of the conversations between the mother and the grandmother about what constitutes a family and do we get to choose our family and things like that. And I think that you're right with this film. These people are doing some crazy melodramatic things, but on the surface, when you're watching it, you totally buy it.
So you're kind of saying it's like Fast and Furious.
Yeah, that's exactly what it says.
It's
yeah.
about family. Yeah, exactly. La
Familia. It's about family. Yeah.
Oh, man, that scene.
I don't got friends.
After they steal that stuff from the shop and then just go back home for some Coronas. Yeah. What I mean, a moment.
Billy Frankie is a Corona man.
Yeah.
None of this craft beer stuff. You reminded me that I have been drawing comparisons to almost everything by Satoshi Kon this month, but the one thing that Shoplifters reminded me of was a film of his called Tokyo Godfathers, in which a group of homeless people adopt a baby that they find literally in a pile of garbage. So it's kind of like Shoplifters is more or less like a much calmer...
A non-Christmas set.
Yeah, non-Christmas set, but a much more toned down thing. But what you were saying about his kind of creator's thoughtfulness in like creating these stories is that talking to him was really revealing in how he kind of thinks about these things, because he just kind of starts at this very one, very particular point and then just works outwards. And in the case of Shoplifters, he was saying that the thing that kind of kicked off his thinking about the film was a case in which some criminals were caught by the police because they had gone fishing or something like that. They'd used some fishing rods. And this is the thing that led him back to them. And apparently, like, these were things that they didn't need to have or didn't need to use. And then that kind of led him to thinking, why would these people do this? And then it started, and then it led him to the whole kind of like family without blood ties thing, which I just thought was so fascinating in the way it kind of just starts at this kind of point and then just fans out with kind of like.
So that's like Stranger Than Fiction kind of thing that he does. Yeah. Like, a lot of his films are based around these stories that have happened in Japan. I think Nobody Knows is the same.
Yes. Yeah, with the abandoned child.
Yeah, with the abandoned children. And like you said, like, these are stories that fan out. They start with a very simple concept and then fan out, and slowly you kind of see everything trickle down and form like a kind of a basis for what he's trying to say. And it's fascinating to see it happen. It does feel like, when you're watching it, it does feel like the work of a master, because of how it falls down on you all of a sudden. All of the kind of emotions that building up in the film fall down on you all of a sudden, rather than, you know, in these very kind of...
But it's not like a tidal wave that hits you when it does.
No.
It's like it's always been creeping up on you like a bath or something, and then gradually you realise you're just...
Those creeping up on you baths.
Those surprise baths I'm always taking.
Suddenly you've been in there for ages and your like toes are all wrinkled.
Yeah, exactly. Because of the tears. Yeah. It's a really beautiful film, and the performances, I think Lily Frankie's really at the centre of it. He's been in Corrida's films before. He's really lovely in Our Little Sister. He's the quote-unquote dad in this one. He feels so real and cheeky, but there's no like Fagin like urchin quality to him. He just feels like a real guy despite the melodrama of the situation.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, all throughout he's trying to get this kid to call him dad. Yeah. I think that kind of arc throughout the film is one that kind of got me. You know, he's asking him to call him dad, but he's also acting in a way that is father-like. You know, he's not just saying it for ego's sake. He is this dad figure to this kid.
And we don't question that, even though the fatherly actions are, here's the best way to steal a fishing rod.
Yeah, exactly. And it's interesting the debate that, or the line that he toys with between what's moral and what's immoral, you know, what's right, what's wrong. You know, with the kid and with, you know, them taking the child, you know, that it's wrong to take a child, but this child also comes from an abusive home. So it's also sort of a commentary maybe on like the failures of the state, you know, especially when it comes to children and
that's definitely a theme through as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. He has an extremely skeptical eye on the Japanese government.
But
that's what's so fantastic is that he's telling this story and he's making these criticisms through people, not through politics.
Yeah,
that he's making them through people who are actually living these kind of lives. They're a believable group of people in every single sense of the word. They come across as genuine people. You can see why they're stealing. They're actually all working very, very hard as well. And still having to do these things, and you don't kind of question that. And it's interesting that you say that Lily Frankie holds it all together, because I felt that it was more Socorro Ando as the mother of as Noboyu, who kind of really typifies what this family are. The first time we see her, one of the first times we see her, she's kind of walking down the street in the dark, big hoodie on, drinking a beer, and she looks like a proper layabout. but then you actually get to know her as a character, and she's not. She works hard for this family, and she does everything she can to kind of keep them together. She doesn't really have any particular reason to do this other than, you know, having a support network around her. And the same goes for Kieran Kiki's character as well, as the grandma. They're together because they want to be together.
Yeah.
The way you said it, it's also, I like that it dismisses the notion that working hard will just get you whatever you want. Mm. And it's sometimes there are structures in place that fail people, and they're quite literally invisible, because like when you're approaching their house, it's like covered by trees and stuff, just this big overgrown thing. Like you would miss it like walking by, and yet there's this whole incredibly complex little family just off the margins.
Does feel as though a camera's just turned into their house and just started filming things, because it's a very intimate film, like not just in the kind of emotional sense, but in the physical sense as well. You don't even understand how these cameras can fit in this room, because it's so kind of tiny.
You mentioned his the set design and how it kind of reminded you of Ghibli films, but the set design in his films is always so dense with stuff, like it just has
clutter.
All of these the clutter of his films, it makes everything feel so lived in, just like piles of kind of just like shabby looking books or something in some of his other films, and just all these little touches, everything's so particular in how they set up these different spaces.
So that is Shoplifters, which is currently the number 4 highest grossing film of the year in Japan, and I'm sure will be the same over here. Come on, listeners.
I hope so. I think it's the most deserving palm in a long time.
To everyone listening, I hold you personally responsible.
Let's make Shoplifters the UK's Venom.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right, so we're going to move on now to chat a little bit about Assassination Nation. What if everyone's online life were exposed? As it turns out, sheer bloody anarchy, all led by 4 teenage feminists. The Purge jumps into a blender with Mean Girls in this story of youth gone wild in Salem, USA. Now, this is directed by Sam Levinson, son of Barry Levinson. Kelly, can you give us a bit of info on Assassination Nation?
So this film is crazy.
2018.
Cool. No, it's really good. I really loved it. It is kind of one of those polarizing films, I think. A lot of people that I don't think enjoyed it. But it's for me, I really enjoy films that spark debate, that make you think and make you want to unpack it. I think it's also an important film with what it's trying to say.
It's not a subtle film.
It's not a subtle film, not at all. I mean, it explicitly states what its themes are, like, all throughout the film.
It's the town that it's based in is called
Salem.
Salem,
yeah.
Which I mean,
yeah.
I see.
Salem Witch Trials.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's got its problems, I think, as sort of any film would. But I thought that it was really bold, tied together really well. I didn't think that it would. Based on watching the trailer, I was like, how is this film going to come together? But it really did. It kind of switches its tone sort of halfway through.
It's about basically an entire town's archive of naughty texts and
that
photos
become exposed,
get
yeah.
entirely leaked by, and everyone knows everyone's
business.
Life of their phone.
Yeah.
And it just causes chaos.
I mean, that's terrifying, right? Like, yeah. That's a scary thought, is that, you know, everybody's problems and personal lives being exposed in an instant is a very kind of, you mentioned The Purge. It's a horror film. In 2018, it's a horror film setup. But it's these four women at the heart of the film that get kind of blamed for the leaks and witch hunted, basically, that kind of, I think they make the film, and Sam Levinson's direction makes the film, because it's a very well constructed film. It's got some amazing set pieces. Visually, there's one scene where they're being kind of hunted down in a house, and they don't know it, and the camera's kind of going from window to window.
So
it's almost Hitchcockian, to be perfectly honest. And it's got a lot of artistry behind it. But I think it's a very 2018 film, in the sense that it's trying to cover so many important issues, social issues, and some of them it nails like spot on, and it really like makes you sit up and realize it, and others it kind of misses the mark a little bit.
Yeah, it seems like tonally confusing, but that, as you said, that's what makes it interesting.
For sure.
That it doesn't pull its punches. It's really going for it. And it's got this wave of social justice behind it, but then also the lead characters are very happy to be wielding quite enormous automatic weapons.
So I attended the screening with the final girls, so sort of did an introduction and a panel discussion afterwards, and that came up, you know, sort of how people have said, yeah, okay, well, these women also sort of use violence and guns, and but it was sort of spoken about in the context of like, well, if this is the language that people understand, specifically men in America, then that's the language we have to sort of use. And it also it's like very phallic, these guns that they wield, and it is almost like this reclamation of agency and power. I don't think that it's violence for violence sake. I think it's trying to say something.
Sounds like Spring Breakers.
Yeah,
it's kind of Spring Breakers-y. I think it's not as good as Spring Breakers, because Spring Breakers, I think, is the work of like a true auteur. And I think that, oh yeah, it is.
okay, buddy.
But Assassin, I mean, whether he's a good auteur or not, he does have a kind of very strong sense of kind of, Harmony Korine has a very strong sense of, I think, direction.
That he does.
whereas Assassination Nation, I think, is kind of a lot more, I would be surprised if it doesn't do very well, because I think it's kind of, it fits very nicely and neatly into the mainstream and into what's happening at the moment.
From what I've heard about it, it sounds like it's designed very deliberately to provoke a strong reaction, which I think it has been very successfully. Also, you mentioned Mean Girls, and I feel like that sounds spot on, because just hearing the description of what it's about sounds like the Burn Book part of that movie, but with guns.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, and they also use the trope. They play with stereotypes and tropes, you know, that, like, I mean, you know, the classic slow-mo girl walk where all their legs are in. They do that a couple of times. It doesn't feel smart-ass. It kind of feels, it's still cool, and it, like, works in the moment, but it's also trying to say something about that kind of...
Yeah.
And also how film...
Using those teenage tropes
exactly.
as an access point into maybe talking about something that
those
films won't touch on as closely,
and then also how those films have contributed to sort of the perception of females in high school, and like, it's a very clever film, and it's doing a lot.
I think it's clever too, and I'm waiting for someone to write an article on whether Assassination Nation is actually a conservative film rather than a liberal one, because I think it positions itself as a super liberal film in it, especially with the at the start it gives you basically a list of
trigger warnings.
I was going to ask about that. That was actually in the film.
It is.
I remember seeing the trailer for that, and I was like,
and it gives you a list of these trigger warnings, but then when it comes down to it, it feels like part of what the film's saying is like, pick up your guns, go outside, cause some damage, well, which is now almost a conservative point of view.
I think it's interesting because they have that sort of debate throughout. I think the films are is playing to audiences to ask them to question that, you know, because it makes posts fine of at conservative ideals and values, but it also looks at the extremes of both of, you know, conservative ideals and values and liberal, because there's a part that happens to the principal sort of near the beginning, and it kind of delves into how dangerous like taking liberalism to the extreme can also be.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It sounds like with all that drama and guns and noise and debate, it's very much a companion piece to Shoplifters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, nice chilled out one. Yeah, chilled double bill for the weekend.
Total opposite.
Yeah,
the whole makes your family geared out in long leather coats.
Yes,
definitely. Yeah, when at the end of Shoplifters they go out guns blazing. Yeah, and who expected that? Right. So yeah, that is Assassination Nation and Shoplifters, which are in cinemas this weekend. If you don't fancy going to the cinema and you fancy staying in, why not watch something on Curzon Home Cinema? My pick for this week would be Columbus, which I'm a big fan of. Sadly, we didn't get to do an episode on it, but it's
love
a film.
Columbus. Yeah,
yeah, I can see excellent. You guys' eyes light up. Yeah.
I'm just so happy it's on Curzon Home Cinema. I think that's really great that people can watch it at home now, because it seemed to dip in and out of the cinema a little bit.
Yeah, it's one of these old ones where I think its debut was January 2017 at Sundance, but we're finally getting it here, and it's just a really lovely, well-composed film. I think in the spirit of a Shoplifters as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Very meditative.
Yeah, meditative, yeah. Aesthetically, like very clever, the way that the shots are set up, never boring to look at.
John Cho is handsome.
Very handsome.
Oh, lovely man. Do go and check that one out. Very, very lovely. And you can head to last week's episode of the podcast for our discussion on Luca Guadagnino's Suspiria and Fantastic Beasts 2 as well. And if you want to check out the original Suspiria, that's on home cinema as well. So make sure you check that out. If you've got any thoughts on Shoplifters or Assassination Nation or any other recent releases, let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com, and we can read those out on next week's show. And if you haven't already, do please subscribe to us. You can do that on iTunes, Acast. We're now on Spotify as well. And when you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that would be wonderful. Next week, for the second time this year, we're looking at a film by Sebastian Lelio. Last time it was A Fantastic Woman. This time, Disobedience. And that's really about it for this episode. If you want to keep in touch with everyone, you can follow Campbell A on Twitter at
Campbell A Campbell. I guess you can see the spelling in the description of the
episode. Stephen, you're a prolific tweeter.
Prolific.
Yeah.
No, you can find me on Letterboxd. Letterboxd is where I do most of my writing. It's Hydra815.
Hydra815. And Kelly, yourself? Anywhere?
Letterboxd or Twitter.
Whichever one. Are you KS underscore Powell on both?
I'm KS underscore Powell on Twitter, and I'm Kelly P triple E on Letterboxd.
Lovely. So keep up with all of us there, including me, Jake H. Cunningham, if you so desire. And that's really about it. Thanks so much for listening. See you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.